Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the architectural track B224. This is Understanding Access and Information Protection Architecture. My name is Greg Blum. I'm a senior program manager in the Windows Server and System Center group. And we're going to be talking about all of the things that we've put into Windows Server 2012 R2 that support the access and information protection scenarios. Before I get started, how many people were in the People-Centric IT foundational session on Tuesday morning right after the keynote? Just raise your hand. Not very many. Okay, so the stuff at the beginning is going to be a repeat for that person. It will be new to everybody else. All right, let's start talking about today's challenges that we're trying to address in this space. The first one is that users are really expecting today to be able to bring in a lot of different devices. They have their own devices. They want to be able to work in any location, have access to the corporate information, to their personal information, and be able to do their work. So that we're seeing this blur of work time and free time, and people wanting to use these devices that they're familiar with, that are their own personal devices. We've come from an area in past in corporate IT that was very device-centric. The devices were all owned by corporate IT, and it was therefore very easy to manage them. But now as we're in this scenario where we see users wanting to bring their own PCs in, we're seeing an explosion of the different types of devices that are being attempted to connect to the corporate network and access corporate information. We see that there is a wide variety of different type of devices. The operating system on those devices can be wide and varied. We see Apple devices, we see Android devices, we see a wide variety of different form factors. So this is really making it difficult for corporate IT to provide a standard or to manage those devices as they get access to the applications that the users want to have. Deploying and managing all the applications that are necessary across these different platforms can be very difficult for corporate IT to do, especially in a scenario where people are bringing in their own machines. People may not want to have a lot of different corporate applications on those devices, but they still want to have access to the data, to their corporate data, or their own data that they need to get access to do their job. So they need to be productive. But IT needs to manage the risk of these BYO, bring your own devices, and reduce the overall risk. In many cases, there's a lot of compliance that corporate IT and corporate security have to keep in mind as they allow these devices to have access to the information on the corporate network. So these are the challenges that IT is facing today. You know this better than anyone. How do we really move from this scenario where everything was very device-centric? Corporate IT owned the devices. How do we move from that to a more focused area on the users, focused on people? And that's what we call our people-centric IT vision. So the users want to have access to the information. Corporate IT wants to be able to manage those devices and ensure that those devices are secure. If those devices are lost, they want to be able to wipe the corporate information off of it without wiping a person's personal photos or contacts off of those devices. So we've moved from a scenario that's device-centric to one that's more people-centric. We are enabling the end users. So we look at three main scenarios in this space. The first one is enabling the end users to work on the device of their choice and still provide access to the corporate resources that they need to get their jobs done. The next one is unifying the environment. So for the IT managers themselves, they want to deliver a unified management system, both for on-premises machines and machines that are in the cloud, those personal devices that spend most of their life or most of their connected life in the cloud as opposed to on the corporate network. They still want to be able to manage those. So unifying your environment is another area that we're focusing on. And then the last one, this last mile or last kilometer, is protecting the data, the corporate data. and providing the capability for an IT manager and a chief security officer to know that their systems and their data are secure, and managing the overall risk as a variety of different devices come into the network. This is our people-centric IT vision. So let's start diving into these three areas, and we'll talk about the architecture that we've enabled to support these areas. In the access and information protection area, we've got the three scenarios that I just talked about, empowering the users. Firstly, you saw in the keynote that we've got a new scenario that we've enabled with Windows Server 2012 R2 that enables the registration and enrollment of personal devices, these bring-your-own devices. Adam Hall showed this in the keynote. I'm going to be talking about the architecture that we use to support that. We've also added a new feature, which is the capability to automatically connect to internal resources when access is needed to that. That's the automatic VPN capability that we're now lighting up with Windows Server 2012 R2. The capability for a client, as the client opens an application, to understand that a VPN connection is necessary for that particular application to have access to the corporate data. And that VPN connection will automatically start up and allow the user to connect to that data that's on the back end that they need. And then lastly, in this space, access to company resources is consistent across the variety of different devices. You saw this in the keynote when we talked about the company portal application that is available to a wide different a variety of devices. This comes with our capabilities with Windows Intune. So these are the three main things that we're lighting up with new scenarios and new capabilities for empowering users. We're going to drill into all of these. In the unifying the environment area, we want to provide a common identity. So Active Directory is the common identity for on-premise solutions. We want to take that capability and allow it to also operate in the cloud. So connecting that up to Windows Azure Active Directory or other cloud-based directories. And when federating that Active Directory that you have in your corporate IT up to a cloud service, so the user is going to use their own ID, their corporate ID, with a single sign-on to access applications and data. And then lastly, protecting the data. Centralizing the data for compliance and data protection is important. You don't want to have a lot of corporate data floating around on these BYO devices. And corporate IT wants to have the capability to understand what's out there, to automatically apply appropriate security credentials and security controls to that data. So we have policy-based access control to both applications and the data. We've got some new scenarios here. Work folders was the one that we talked about in the keynote. I'm going to talk about work folders in more detail in this session. So let's drill into these. First is the empowering users. Let's talk about the challenges in this space. I mentioned this before. Users have their own device. They want to be able to use that device of their choice and have access to whether it's personal resources that are on there or work-related applications, data, and all the different things that they need to get their job done, because we're seeing this blur of work and personal time. They want an easy way to be able to access their applications from anywhere, on any device. And so this is often a problem. That's a challenge that we want to address. IT departments want to enable users to work like this. However, because of regulatory requirements and because of security requirements, they need to have very controlled access to corporate information. So these are the challenges. Let's light those up with some solutions. Users can register their device, which makes it then known to corporate IT. This is what we call a give-get scenario. The user says, I'm going to give you, corporate IT, some access to my personal device. In exchange, I will get access to the corporate information that I need on that device. They can also enroll their devices, which gives them the company portal application for consistent access to applications on those devices, an easy way to go and install these corporate apps on their device. And then lastly, IT themselves can publish access to corporate resources. When you publish access to a corporate resource, you want to have knowledge of the device itself, the user identity, as well as the network location. So all three of those scenarios come in play, and IT wants to know all three of those before they're going to provide access to corporate information. So that's how we're going to address these challenges. Let's start talking about these in detail. How users can work from anywhere on their device with access to their corporate resources. They want to utilize their corporate identity. Windows Server Active Directory is the architecture that we have behind that. The new scenario that we've enabled with Windows Server 2012 is the workplace join scenario. I'm going to demonstrate that and talk about the architecture of that in just a few seconds. They can also enroll their devices for easy access to the company portal. That gives them the capability to pull down an application and install it on their machine or their device. With Windows Server 2012, there's a role that is a remote access role. With the remote access role, I can then provide corporate access with direct access technologies, as well as VPN connections, including the new automatic VPN connection capability. That's a role on Windows Server. A new role for Windows Server 2012 R2 is the Windows Server Web Application Proxy. With this Web Application Proxy, we can publish access based on a device awareness, understanding that the device is something that we know, as well as the user's identity. And I'll talk a little bit about that and show you where that is in the Windows Server software. And then lastly, there's the Windows Server RDS Gateway. The RDS Gateway is going to give me the capability to publish desktop virtualization, whether that's VDI, remote app, session hosts, any of those. I can publish with that RDS Gateway capability in the remote connections. So for a user to register their device, they can register a device, and then that will give them the capability to use Active Directory's single sign-on capabilities. This is with Workplace Join. Part of what we do in the Workplace Join scenario is we install a certificate on the device that is specific to that device. We also create a new device object in Active Directory, and I'm going to show you in Windows Server 2012 in just a second where that is. We create a new device object and store it in Active Directory, and that establishes that a link between that user and the device that they say that they own, that they wanted to be able to get access to corporate information with. The web application proxy is the edge role in Windows Server 2012 R2 that we use to publish the capability for workplace join. We can also use multi-factor authentication. You saw in the keynote that we used what we previously called phone factor authentication, where it dialed out to the phone. Adam answered the phone and he hit the star key to confirm. We're now calling that Windows Azure Active Authentication. So that can take a variety of different forms. Phone is one of them. For the capability to do workplace join, we leverage ADFS. And I'm going to talk more about ADFS in a few minutes. But ADFS, in the improvements that we've made in Windows Server 2012 R2, allows us to have that multi-factor authentication capability and that device registration. Enrolling a device is something that a user can do, and that is through Windows Intune. That then allows them to have the company portal on the application for on their device for access to the different corporate applications. Windows Intune as a cloud service is then linked to your System Center Configuration Manager infrastructure and synchronized that provides a unified management layer. Now, the great thing about the synchronization between Windows Intune and System Center Configuration Manager is once you set it up, Windows Intune just looks like a site server to your internal System Center Configuration Manager infrastructure. And you do all of your management directly within the System Center Configuration Manager console. You don't have to go to the Windows Intune console to do any of the day-to-day management of these devices. That's all done within the SCCM console. Okay, so let's take a look at the workplace join and the architecture behind that. I'm going to start on a Windows 8.1 machine, and I'm logged in. This is a personal device, and I'm going to go down here. I'm going to pull up the settings charm. From here, I'm going to choose the Change PC Settings choice. From the PC Settings choice, I see I've got a new setting here called Network. I will click on that. And you'll see there's an entry down here for Workplace. Click on that. I'm going to enter my user ID. And I'm going to click the Join button. This will connect. So the first thing that we, I'm going to connect this, I'll say the first thing that you have to do as part of the architectural setup for Workplace Join is there's a DNS entry. There's a DNS entry that's an external DNS entry that allows the machines that are these BYO devices, when they click the Workplace Join, they know how to get into your architecture and into your system to do the Workplace Join. So there's a DNS entry that has to be in place. That's the first thing. I'm going to go ahead and put my password in. And I'll sign in. And now I get an indication that the device has joined the corporate network. Okay, so that's what I wanted to show on the client. Let's go take a look at the server. What I'm on now is I'm on my domain controller. And I'm going to show you a new capability that we've invested in Windows Server 2012 R2, which is the Active Directory Administration Center. I'm in the Server Manager dashboard. I'm just going to click on Tools, and there's the Active Directory Administration Center. This provides a centralized management of the Active Directory. Okay. Should have popped right up. Okay, there we go. Okay, here's the Active Directory Administration Center. And from the Active Directory Administration Center, I see here's my domain, my Contoso 2013 domain. You'll notice a new entry, a new OU in the Active Directory. It says Foreign Security Principles. If I look at Foreign Security Principles, I will see several SIDs. These SID entries are entries for the devices that have joined via the workplace join. Now, if I'm going to go ahead and take a look at one of these. Let's take a look at the information that's present on this device. I'll look at the attributes. And I will see a large list of attributes on this device. See the admin description, I see kind of the distinguished name, a bunch of other information on it. Right. If I go to general, I'll also see some more, in the security settings, I'll see some more information on it as well. So this is where I would go and I would see a list of all the devices that have connected in via Workplace Join. Now the other piece of the architecture that we have to have in place to do this is our device registration service. That's on a different machine in my architecture, so I'm going to go to that. And it's within ADFS. I mentioned earlier that ADFS is one of the pieces that we enable sitting behind the web application proxy to do the device registration. So here I am looking at the ADFS administration, and if I look at the authentication policies, I will see a device registration service. Now let's take a look at that one. In my example, I did not turn on multi-factor authentication for Workplace Join. You can turn this on. If you want to turn it on, you can either turn on multi-factor authentication with a global setting, or you can turn it on individually here for the device registration service. This one is currently, you see here that it is currently pulling its settings from the global authentication provider. Now, if I wanted to modify that, I could do that in everything then, as far as the multi-factor authentication would pull from that. Or I can say that multi-factor authentication is required for the following types of devices, whether that's an unregistered device, like this one was before I came in, or that's a registered device. I can also require multi-factor authentication on a location awareness. I mentioned earlier, it's the users, it's the devices, and it's their network location. So I can base that off of their network location as well, if they're coming in from the extranet, or the which is basically the internet, or the intranet. The global authentication is right here. See, edit global primary authentication. And this is where I see my global authentication policy that every new policy that I create in Windows Server 2012 R2 is going to inherit off of this. This is where I determine what type of multi-factor authentication I'm going to use. As an example, in this scenario, I've turned on the phone factor or Windows Azure services for multi-factor authentication. But because I did not require it in my workplace join, when I did the workplace join on my client machine, it didn't ask me for another factor. I can also enable that on a security group or an individual user level. So I could say I want to enable it for all domain users. Or if I wanted to deploy this in a pilot in my environment, I could create a pilot group for people that are going to participate in this and assign those people the rights to be able to do this as well. Okay. All right, that's the demo for Workplace Join and talking about the architecture behind it. Next, let's talk about the web application proxy. The web application proxy is another new role that we've released in Windows Server 2012 R2. The web application proxy is going to give us the capability for users to access corporate applications and data wherever they are. We utilize this to authenticate the users as well as the devices themselves with the multi-factor authentication that I just showed. There's two real modes that we can enable in the web application proxy. There's just a traditional plain reverse proxy pass-through mode, for example, for NTLM and basic authentication applications. That would leverage Active Directory on the back end as well. And then there's the new capability to use conditional access against Active Directory Federation services. This gives us very granular control over how and where the applications themselves can be accessed. Note that if you do want to use multi-factor authentication for anything that you're providing access to, whether that's this workplace join capability or just an application like a SharePoint application that you want to publish, if you want to use the multi-factor, you have to use ADFS. Multi-factor will not work with this standard reverse proxy pass-through. This gives us access to a variety of different style of published applications, whether that's a claims and Kerberos application, an Office Forms-based access, or what we call a RESTful OAuth app. So, variety of different applications that I could provide access to, but I would need ADFS to do that. The web application proxy can also authenticate against Windows Azure Active Directory, and developers can leverage Azure mobile services as they create their other cloud-based applications for authentication purposes. So let's take a look at the web application proxy and how that's set up in Windows Server 2012. I'm going to go back over to my demo box. Now I'm going to go over here to my proxy device. And I'm going to start in the Server Manager dashboard. Now, to add the capability for a machine to have a web application proxy, I need to add it as a role in service. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to go through the Add Roles and Features and show you where that is. I would go to Add Roles and Features, walk through the wizard, and I'm going to do a role-based or feature-based installation. This is the server I'm working on right now, so I'm going to select that. And I will see the remote access role. I'm going to expand this. The remote access role in Server 2012 had the direct access capabilities. It had the routing, but now we see a new one, which is the web application proxy. So that's new to 2012 R2. I would add that first, walk through the role wizard. I've already done it on this machine, so I'm going to go ahead and cancel out. Once I've done that, then to configure it, I would pull up the remote access management console. So to do that, again, I'm going to start here in the Server Manager dashboard. I'm going to go to my Tools menu, and I'm going to pull up the Remote Access Management. From the Remote Access Management console, I will now see the configurations. If I've got direct access and VPN capabilities set up, or if I want to do that, I do that with this node here. If I want to do the web application proxy, I would click that node. Now, I'm in the web application proxy, and I'm on this machine, and I see that I've currently got an application that I've published. If I wanted to publish a new one, I would just go over here to my task pane and click publish. I mentioned that there were two modes in web application proxy. This is where I choose which one I want: Active Directory Federation Services or the pass-through. The pass-through is for the NTLM and basic authentication scenarios. I'm going to choose Active Directory Federation Services. Now I choose what is my relying party for this application. If I were setting up the device registration capabilities for the workplace join that I demoed earlier, I would choose the device registration service here. If I'm setting up something else, maybe I'm setting up another SharePoint farm, or I'm setting up the capability to do the work folders, I could choose one of these other ones, or I can create a new one. I choose which one of my relying parties I want to use. And then I would give a name for this . Say I've got an expenses web-based application, and I'm going to give the URL for it. And I can then select an external certificate. Then I would just go ahead and hit next and go ahead and finish this one to publish a new application. So the web application proxy makes it pretty easy to publish an application or to publish the device registration capabilities. But again, first of all, I have to add that as a role on Server 2012 R2. Okay. Another capability we talked about in the keynote is the work folders capability, where the users can take corporate data and place it on their device and have that with them wherever they go. They want to be able to sync this data. You can also configure it such that the users have to register their devices to be able to synchronize data. IT can go back in and selectively wipe the corporate data from these Windows 8.1 clients. So as a user chooses to connect with work folders on a personal device and have data available, then if that device is lost, IT can go and wipe it, or they can just remove permissions for that device to be able to access anything, and everything will be removed then. couple of different techniques for publishing these. There's the web application proxy, which I mentioned and have demoed already. If I use the web application proxy, then I actually get an access policy capability as well. If I use just a traditional reverse proxy, whether that's a hardware-based proxy or just the standalone reverse proxy service as part of the web application proxy, and I don't choose to use ADFS, then I just get basic sync. But if I choose the web application proxy, then I can provide conditional access such that to participate in work folders, the users have to have already registered their device with the workplace join. This goes against the Windows Server file services systems on the back end and just uses file shares. Now, while I'm on this slide, I'm going to briefly talk about the differences between this and using SharePoint, because a lot of folks that I talk to about this say, well, if I'm already using SharePoint to store a lot of corporate data, and users, when they access that, they're just coming in through our extranet and accessing a SharePoint site. That's all well and good. We also know that file servers are still very active in use. As a matter of fact, studies that we have done have shown that file server growth is about the same on a year-to-year basis as the growth of SharePoint sites. So file servers are still out there being actively used. And if you're using and storing data in file servers, then work folders is the way for you to take that offline onto devices. If you are using SharePoint as your primary storage or have documents stored there, then having extranet access to SharePoint or utilizing SkyDrive Pro is the way to go. For authentication on the back side of this, I have Active Directory, and domain joined devices can participate in this as well. They don't have to be domain joined to do the work folders. Okay, so let's take a look at the work folders and how that infrastructure is set up. Go back over here to the demo. I'll pull up my work folders machine. And I'm going to start here again from the Server Manager dashboard. So to set up work folders, I obviously have to have a role installed. So I'm going to go back into this Add Role and Features wizard and show where that is. I'll pull that up. What I want to do is I want to add based on role-based or feature-based installation. This is the server that I'm on, so I'm going to go ahead and select that one. And now I have file and storage services. I'm going to click to open that up. There we go. And as I expand that, I see that it's got the file server role installed and the work folders role installed. Now this is where I go and add that. Once I've added the work folders role, from the Server Manager dashboard, I can immediately administer that. I would click on File and Storage Services, and I will see a new node down here, which is Work Folders. I've already set one up on this, but if I wanted to set up a new folder, it's very easy to do. Let's take a look at the one that I have set up. There's the share. Let's take a look at the properties of that share. Here's my sync share that I already have set up. This is the server it's on. This is the name of the share. This is the path of the share. And this is where I determine who has synchronized access to this particular group of work folders. In this case, I've only given it to Adam. And do I have any device policies in place for work folders? For example, do I want to encrypt the work folders on the target devices? Now, if I want to set a new one up, it's pretty easy. I just go to my task and set up a new sync share. And again, it's going to be a wizard that'll walk me through this. So I would just choose which server it's on, enter a local path, I'm just going to choose the same share. It already contains a sync share. So I'd have to have a new path set up to create a new one. But I would just walk through this wizard to create up a sync share. It's going to ask me the server path, folder structure, and then a sync share name. And then it will ask me the same things that I saw in the previous screen, the device policies and user policies for that. So again, that's something that you administer within the file server role on Windows Server 2012 R2. Let's transition and start talking about remote access. We've had the capability for a while of direct access. With direct access, users are automatically connected to their corporate network whenever an internet connection happens to be available. This is can operate in two modes, direct access can. It can operate in a full mode, which is users and management, user traffic and management traffic. It can also operate in what we call a manage-only mode. In a manage-only mode, this allows IT to manage the device, but it doesn't allow the device itself and the user itself the capability to connect into the corporate network. So I can choose either of those options when I'm setting up direct access. If I choose to go ahead and enable the full direct access so the user can connect in, the connection to the intranet is always active when the user actually connects to the internet. It uses a variety of different transition technologies. Direct access is an IPv6 technology. However, we understand that most places don't have IPv6 deployed, so therefore we have transition technologies that take IPv6, packetize it, and drop it over IPv4 for direct access. So even in an IPv4 scenario, you can continue to use direct access. That will then come into the corporate network, give me access to all the different things, just like I was on the corporate network, whether that's VDI, session host, web apps, line of business applications, or whatever. A traditional VPN, we still have these, are user-initiated and provide what we call on-demand connectivity to corporate resources. Now, one of the downsides to this is an admin cannot create a connection from the internet going out. Direct access, an admin can. And one of the problems about a traditional VPN is users always have to remember before they try to access something on the corporate network, oh, wait, I'm not VPN'd in yet. I have to remember to do that before I launch this application that requires internal access. The new capability with Windows Server 2012 R2 and the Windows 8.1 clients is an automatic VPN connection. So as the user launches an application that requires access to corporate resources, what will happen is the VPN connection will automatically pop up to the user and initiate them to start the VPN connection. They will still need to put in their credentials, but it will at least pop the VPN connection right to them so they can go ahead and start that connection. Okay, let's start talking about how we unify the environment. A couple of challenges here. Users want to use their common identity when they're accessing any type of corporate resource, whether they're on-premise or whether they're using a BYO device and they're operating in the cloud. They want to take that corporate credential and use that to authenticate. For IT, having a lot of different identities or keeping the information in sync across those identities is really a drain on IT resources and difficult to manage over time. So we look at some solutions. The first is that users are going to have a single sign-on experience, regardless of what device they're using, regardless of where they are as far as network location. They want to bring their own Active Directory credentials that they're used to using to access their daily information. IT can leverage this identity to still provide access to external resources that are in the cloud through federation scenarios with Active Directory federation services. And IT can very consistently manage these identities that are on-premise as well as cloud-based identity solutions to ensure that the on-premise Active Directory implementation and the cloud-based identity domain is in sync. Okay. So let's take a look at the domain join capabilities. Traditionally, you've got a machine that a user has that's a personal device. They can't or usually won't want to join that to the corporate network, right? So they're going to operate in a scenario where they're not joined. These devices are unknown. IT has no control over them. You could provide some access to corporate information, but the users are going to always have to authenticate. Our new scenario is workplace join, where we register a device that is then known, and device authentication via a certificate allows IT to provide conditional access to any confidential corporate information they happen to have on their environment. And then the last one, the one that still a lot of companies use, and obviously this is the primary scenario, is a full domain join machine. Full domain join machines are under the full control of IT, can provide complete access to all corporate information. So let's take a look at these different scenarios. So for the first one, if the machine is not joined, you can do a browser session single sign-on. So as the user opens up the browser and they authenticate to something, and as long as they leave the browser open, because we're using cookies, right, in a session, as long as the user leaves the browser open, they can move to different resources and keep that single sign-on. But if they close the browser and reopen it, they're going to have to re-authenticate. Now, none of the other scenarios are enabled in a non-joined scenario. Two-factor authentication for web apps, can't do it. Enterprise application single sign-on, can't do it. Desktop single sign-on, can't do it. With the new workplace join capability that we've introduced with Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2012 R2, I get a few additional capabilities. I still have this browser session single sign-on. This is what we call the lowest common denominator approach. I'm going to have that across all of these. But as I join a machine with workplace join, I also get two-factor authentication capability. You saw me talk about multi-factor authentication where I enable that in ADFS. This is one of the capabilities I'm going to get with a workplace join machine. I'm going to get enterprise application single sign-on because now I know the device and I know the user. But I'm still not going to have a desktop single sign-on capability. The domain join is the full plate. I have everything. I have capability to do browser sign-on, the two-factor auth, the enterprise app single sign-on, as well as the desktop single sign-on. So this is important to note the differences between these three domain join capabilities. And the new one is in the center, the workplace join. Windows Server Active Directory, we've made a number of enhancements and changes to it in 2012 R2, optimized for the cloud. We've added the capability to scale this with full support for virtualization. Has anybody ever tried to virtualize Active Directory? A few issues here and there. We now have full support for virtualized Active Directories. Rapid deployment is also now available with what we call domain controller cloning. Makes it very easy to scale this out to multiple domain controllers. These are new scenarios that we've lit up with 2012 R2. We also have the capability for administrators to manage Active Directory using Windows PowerShell. I love Windows PowerShell, but you can do a lot with it, right? Automation is really important in an IT environment, and having the capability to automate regular tasks against Active Directory with Windows PowerShell really improves the overall experience of an IT administrator, makes it easy to deploy it, makes it easy to manage it. And we've also added the new Active Directory Admin Center for centralized AD management. You saw me use that earlier when I showed where the foreign security principles OU is for the workplace join machines. And of course, I can leverage cloud identity services such as Windows Azure Infrastructure Services and then Windows Server Active Directory in the cloud in conjunction with using Active Directory Federation services to further reduce any potential infrastructure that I might have to run on premise. Of course, developers can leverage a number of APIs to integrate applications to single sign-on. And one of the other new capabilities is the capability to automatically activate a client running Office or Windows 8 or Windows Server 2012 automatically. So if you take a machine and it joins the domain, this is a domain join scenario. I take a machine and I join the domain and it's already been imaged with Windows 8 and Office, it'll automatically activate those as part of the domain join. So that's another new capability that we've added with Windows Server Active Directory. And we want to take Windows Server Active Directory and enable that in a cloud scenario as well. So we wanted to manage the different cloud identities that are out there. We want to leverage our existing infrastructure with AD and cloud enable that to Azure Active Directory. So users are much more productive by having a single sign-on to all their resources, regardless of where they're located. With ADFS, I can connect with Windows Azure Active Directory for a very consistent cloud-based identity. Now, I can choose which attributes with ADFS that I synchronize up to Azure Active Directory as well. I don't have to synchronize the whole directory or all my user objects or all the properties of a user object. As I walk through the ADFS setup and connecting it to Azure Active Directory, I can pick and choose which ones I want to synchronize. There's also the DirSync capability. And we've included this for Office 365 users, and it's been available for a while, to do a sync that automatically keeps all of the properties that you chose to copy up to Azure Active Directory in synchronous fashion with the Active Directory that you have on the backside. Users can get access through their accounts that are happen to be, if they're using Office 365, Windows Intune, all of those cloud-based services leverage Windows Azure Active Directory. So I can bring my corporate identity using ADFS into Windows Azure Active Directory and then leverage that in the cloud services that we deliver with Windows Intune and Office 365. So the users are authenticating to either of those services using their own user ID and password that they use every day. And of course, developers can build applications that leverage this model as well. Now, in Server 2012 R2, we've made a number of enhancements to ADFS. How many people have tried to set up ADFS in the past or done it? Okay, how many of you enjoyed it? Right, very few. ADFS was very difficult to set up and configure in the past. We've made it a lot easier in Windows Server 2012 R2. It's something that you could set up, and I did it in a virtualized environment, and I'm not a wizard with ADFS, but I set it up in a virtualized environment and it took less than 15 minutes to get it all configured and working and all hooked up the way I needed it. Wizard-based, very easy to set it up now. So that makes it pretty easy to set it up and deploy it and manage it. We leverage ADFS through the web application proxy. The web application proxy includes what we call an ADFS proxy. An ADFS proxy talks to ADFS and then to the published applications. So whether those applications are, as I mentioned before, claims and Kerberos web apps, Office form apps, or RESTful OAuth apps, the web application proxy can publish those and utilize ADFS in the Windows Server Active Directory for its authentication provider. Users would then register their devices, again, this workplace join capability, to gain access with device authentication, leveraging the web application proxy and ADFS. Also with ADFS, you can federate directly to other partners. You can also federate to cloud services, such as Office 365 and Windows Azure Active Directory, to provide single sign-on capabilities. So we've really made some major changes to Active Directory Federation services by making it very easy to deploy and manage and including it now in the web application proxy role, which is new. I'm going to transition and talk a little bit about Forefront Identity Manager. Forefront Identity Manager is one of our solutions for corporate identity management. One of the things it provides is the capability for an individual to do self-servicing, add themselves to a group or a distribution list. All the management for that is included in a web page that's part of Forefront Identity Manager. Makes it very easy for a user to go in and add themselves. It also allows you to manage the complete life cycle of certificates and smart cards that are integrated into your Windows Server Active Directory with our certificate lifecycle management solution that's part of Forefront Identity Manager. Users can also reset their passwords via the Windows logon screen. We've noticed that password resets are a significant cost of any IT budget. And reducing that by providing the capability for a user to automatically reset their own password in case they forget it at the Windows logon screen significantly reduces overall help desk burden. Forefront Identity Manager is also utilized to sync users' identity to other directories, such as Oracle's directory, SQL Server databases, LDAP, standard LDAP directories, and many others. And users can manage their identity with a very easy-to-use portal that's tightly integrated into the Office client as well. Forefront Identity Manager also gives us the capability to automate a number of processes. So as you are bringing in a new user to your organization, and that user that you are setting up in Active Directory may need to exist in another of other systems as well. Say that needs to exist in an SAP HR system, or it needs to exist in some other database for some other corporate in-house application. We can automate the provisioning, deprovisioning, and role updates. Also, as users move throughout the organization, if I were in a certain division and I move to another division, I may not have access to the same pieces of the corporate network or same servers that I did before. So as a user moves, you can move them within Active Directory to certain groups, and they will automatically, with Forefront Identity Manager, provision and deprovision access to any systems based on what group they're in. An Identity Manager has hooks to not only Active Directory, to a bunch of other systems. We are working on new scenarios here for connections and updating some of these in Forefront Identity Manager in the near future to have more connectors. You see a lot of the common directory services and databases on the backside here that we can synchronize to. And then we've also provided built-in workflow for identity management. So an administrator can set up some workflow for a user as they move across the organization. It'll move them through the different pieces. Okay. Now let's get to the last part, which is protecting the data. This is the last mile or kilometer where everything in the corporate intelligence is located. How do we protect this? One of the big challenges is users are bringing their own devices in, right? And they want to have access to potentially sensitive information on these devices. How does corporate IT and a chief security officer attest that they can provide access to that in a secure fashion? A significant amount of corporate data simply is a lot of times only on a local device. How do we ensure that that is available across the corporation? So if a device is lost, how many times has this happened? A device is lost and, oops, we just lost a bunch of work or a bunch of data. It was only on that laptop that got stolen or lost. Of course, IT needs to be able to classify information and protect it based on the contents. Part of this is because there's a massive amount of regulatory compliance needs that many companies face. And so having that capability is critical. So users can work on the device of their choice, be able to access all their resources. IT can provide a set of access controls and policies to ensure that sensitive information is protected based on the content of the documents. Again, this was something that we demonstrated in the keynote where a particular piece of information is placed into a document, and automatically we understand that that document needs to be encrypted. And of course, IT can centrally audit and report on all of the information access that happens in the organization. So let's take a look at this. For users accessing corporate data, regardless of their device or location, we have this new Windows work folder capability for data synchronization. We also have desktop virtualization capabilities. So when the data does not need to be on a local device, and IT does not want any of the data on a device, that's a good scenario for a VDI capability or a remote app capability or a session host capability. If I'm using the work folders, IT can publish access to these with the web application proxy role that's new and provide multi-factor authentication based on the content being accessed. Of course, they can monitor all of this and set this up with central audit policies. The RDS gateway role in Windows Server 2012 is what's going to allow us to publish our VDI, session host, remote desktop capabilities, and remote app. That's for the scenario where centralized data is not going to be on a user device. Now, if I want to do this with multi-factor authentication, a user attempts to log in or perform an action that we want to make subject to multi-factor authentication. And again, I determine what applications and data I want to make subject to multi-factor authentication when I use ADFS and when I utilize the web application proxy. When the user authenticates, the application or service performs a multi-factor authentication call, whether that is asking for a certificate, that's asking for a smart card, that's doing a phone factor phone call. The user has to respond to that challenge. It could be a text, phone call, or whatever. Once they respond to that challenge, the response is returned to the application and then allows the user to proceed. And of course, IT can configure both the type and the frequency of multi-factor authentication that the user has to respond to. So within that console where I in ADFS, where I was determining multi-factor authentication, I can base it off of user, group, network location, and I can determine how often it happens to it has to happen, and I can also base it off a device. So if the user, if the device is registered, I may say, okay, once you register it, I don't need multi-factor authentication. Or I may still want multi-factor authentication, but I only need it once a week to for you to still affirm that this is your device. Dynamic access control is going to give us the capability to protect data that resides on Windows Server file shares. So as a user is creating a document or accessing a document, we're going to automatically identify the information in that document. We're also going to automatically classify it based on the content. So it could be based on a keyword or a set of keywords. If a user puts in sensitive information or company confidential, dynamic access control could pick that up and say, oh, I need to classify this, either as the file is created or modified. Based on that, I will then classify it and provide access policy and automated rights management encryption of that document. If that document that the user is working on is synchronized on their device via the work folders, and they're making the changes on the device, on their local copy of work folders, will automatically pick that up as it synchronizes back up to the file share and apply the policy on it. With Active Directory, you're going to have the capability to centrally manage all of these and provide audit policies for IT. Integration with the rights management service is what's going to give us the encryption capability of the documents. And then, of course, I can apply policies across a wide variety of file servers with what we call near real-time classification. So as the documents are accessed, it will pick it up almost instantaneously and classify it on anything new, anything edited that meets its criteria that we need to use for classification. Once we do that and it's automatically classified and it's encrypted, if that file is synchronized down to the local machine, all the rights protection goes with that file. So if that file is then copied off of that BYO device that's synchronizing with work folders, let's say it's copied to a USB key, and that USB key gets handed around, the protection of that document stays with the document wherever it goes. So as someone tries to access that document, it's going to say, oh, I need your authentication provider for this. I need to authenticate that you are somebody that should have access to this document. And then I'm only going to allow you the type of access I say that you can have. I may turn off printing. I may turn off copy capabilities so a user can't highlight a piece of the document and hit Control-C to copy it and paste, and then paste it into something else. So I'm going to recap the access and information protection. The first thing I talked about was empowering the users. Again, new scenarios here for empowering the users are registration and enrollment of these BYO devices. Another new capability is the automatic VPN, capability to automatically connect to an internal resource when it's needed by an application. And then the other new capability is the company portal. Access to the company resources, very consistent. So a user can go to the company portal and pick off these individual company apps that they want to install on their devices. This is really going to empower the end users on these BYO devices to have more productivity. For IT, unifying the environment, we want to provide that Active Directory implementation that utilizes that common identity to access resources that are both on-premise and in the cloud. And again, new scenarios here include the new Active Directory Federation services and the multi-factor authentication. And then lastly, protecting your data. Centralizing the information, providing automatic classification and encryption of documents as they are created, modified, or accessed, and providing policy-based access controls to all the different application and data wherever we have it, whether that's on a file share, whether that's in a SharePoint farm, or wherever, having the capability to have that policy that follows those documents. We've got a number of other breakout sessions that are very similar in content or drill into some of the other ones. I talked about Windows Server work folders. There's a couple of sessions specifically on those. There's a deep dive into the data sync solution. There's more information on work folders in another session. There's more information on dynamic access control. There's some more information on direct access as well. So I'd encourage you to look at those. I'm going to be at the Ask the Experts session tonight, and I'll be up here for a little while if you have further questions. And then I'll also be in the Access and Information Protection booth from time to time. So I'd like to thank everyone for coming. If you have any questions, feel free. And I'd like to encourage you to also please fill out your feedback for the session. This session is recorded, will be available for offline viewing later on Channel 9. So you can watch it again if you think you missed something. The slides are also available for download. And if you've got colleagues that didn't make it to Tech Ed that want this information, they can stream it off of Channel 9 after the session's been posted. So thank you, everyone, for coming, and enjoy the rest of the conference.